This is Taking Stock with Pim Fox and Courtney Donahoe. Listen on demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Now available free for both iPhone and Android devices.
Tonight we're going to raise it.
Don't fight it? Well, Doug Sciocca asks how to fight Fed when the Fed is fighting. And he joins us now from Leawood, Kansas, helping to manage $260 million of client money at Cavar Capital Partners. Doug, good to have you with us on Bloomberg.
Hey, Tim. Great to be here.
What's this idea of how to fight when the Fed is fighting?
Well, you know, it's been quite a while since we've had any level of discontent or dissenting. In fact, since our man Tom Hanning left the Fed in 2012, we've been mollified by a pretty common hymn being sung by the Merry Men and Women on Monetary Policy. But last several weeks, we've witnessed the first of a couple different signs of a lack of cohesion on the Fed's communique and start to wonder if we've hit upon an inflection point as to what is the Fed's next move going to be.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on that? Because I know that you've been looking for harmony. What does harmony have to do with the Fed?
Well, I think, Tim, if you think about, and just to say, it's not a bad thing that we've started to see some interplay that may not necessarily be harmonious, but it certainly makes capital allocations a little bit more challenging, right? Because forever, the de facto liquidity-driven mantra has been, do not fight the Fed. But if the Fed is fighting, what does that do to your strategic allocation decisions? And we're very defensive right now. And I mean, look, if you've had a totally liquidity-driven rally, then the absence or even the contemplation of a reduction in liquidity, then the sustainability of that rally needs to be called into question.
But Doug, isn't this Kathleen Hayes here? Isn't the point always, though, the Fed is like a human being? Today I say, I plan to, go look for a job or do something at work. And then something changes and I change my plans, right? So for eons, people in the markets have watched the economy. They've watched the things the Fed is watching to try and decide what the Fed's going to do. I mean, isn't that what you always have to do with your capital allocation? And at, or at the very least, watch the unemployment rate. Until it gets to 6.5%, the Fed's not going to move the key rate off of zero, allegedly.
Well, that's what they've led, right, Kathleen, is they've given us a couple targets. The unemployment rate at 6.5%, inflation of 2.5%. They don't have a stated GDP growth target. But I think what's interesting is the market going to wait for the Fed? Is the Fed going to be subjected to playing a very difficult game of catch-up? If you just watch the fixed income markets over the course of the last couple weeks, when we went back about briefly today, 2% on the 10-year yield, that was primarily on the heels of a very strong German confidence number last week, some decent corporate earnings here in the United States, and the concern that if we do start to see a stabilization overseas faster than has been anticipated by the Fed's dovish tone to be the world's, not just the U.S. central bank, well, then we have a source of even greater concern, to your point about consideration of
seems to me you're reading the Fed really well.
I don't know. We'll see. I think that's one of the problems, because the Fed has been bailed out, Kathleen, over the course of the last couple years, because on a relative basis, our economic fundamentals have been driving demand to the dollar, and that has soaked up the supply of dollars on the market. But again, if we see international economy stabilizing faster than we've anticipated, we've got another tension point, right? Can that U.S. export economy that was intended to be jump-started by an easy monetary policy rise up enough to offset the profit-eroding power of inflation? And that's going to be really critical in the absence of any outspoken, historically, hawks on this Bernanke Fed.
Well, Doug, until we get the conclusion of those particular options, what are you recommending people do with their money in order to make money?
Yeah, be very defensive.
What does that mean?
And we've talked about within sort of that defensive classification across three broad classes of assets, right? Within equity, the equity asset class, we are looking for dividend-producing stocks, not an uncommon banner being waved right now in the market, where I think what we're trying to do uniquely is position in areas across the world, outside the borders of the United States, where you still have a large amount of cash flow generation because you're selling to countries around the world that still are experiencing organic demand.
So okay, so you've got dividend-producing stocks. What's number two?
Within fixed income, definitely on municipal bonds. You know, we think that obviously the worst of the tax policy that could have obscured the value of munis was forestalled. We think an economy that's percolating along but not popping still keeps a bid in municipal bonds. We also like convertible debt of U.S. corporations. So if we see an elevating GDP, we see some profit appreciation.
All right, and what's number three in this trifecta, Doug?
The third would be stores of value, Pim. And we still think there's an opportunity to buy investments like gold, silver, Swiss-based assets, thing within the alternative asset class that can be beneficial in the event, right, if we're at an inflection point and there's an inelegant transition and that application by the Fed spawns some volatility, we want to have some cushioning in our portfolios in the form of those stores of value.
We got to leave it there. Doug Sciocca, Chief Executive Partner, Cavar Capital Partners, based in Leawood, Kansas, helping to manage $260 million.
You can listen to Taking Stock weekday afternoons at 3 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013, Bloomberg LP.